You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
What can a leader in the 5th century say to leaders in the 21st century? What can we learn about friendship from the 5th century that can apply to us in the 21st century? How does wisdom from the 5th century apply to using social media in the 21st century? All those questions are ones that we explore today as Dr. Ed Smither and I talk about St. Augustine as a mentor. Dr. Ed Smither is professor of intercultural studies and history of global Christianity, and he's dean of the College of Intercultural Studies at Columbia International University. He is the author of Augustine as Mentor, a model for preparing spiritual leaders, published by Brodmann and Holman Press. In this episode, you're going to hear Dr. Smither share his expertise on St. Augustine with some practical insights and takeaways for leaders in the 21st century, specifically for pastors. Augustine lived in a tumultuous time, and so do we today. What does Augustine's leadership have to say to us? Dr. Smither helps us to unpack that question. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor, and then enjoy the podcast.
We are Wesley, and you belong here.
My name is Victoria Borum, and I am Wesley.
I'm Lenny Lucetti, and I am Wesley.
My name is Chris, and guess what? I am Wesley.
Hi, I'm Tina Shapit, and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here too, because we are Wesley.
Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast, Dr. Smither, Ed, as you've
Thank
asked
you.
To be called. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Aaron.
So we were chatting just before we came on air about St. Augustine. He's leading and working and living in a turbulent time. He is offering some of his reflections to the world. He's leading out of the story that God is working in his own life. And you've produced a scholarly book on Augustine called Augustine as Mentor, a Model for Preparing Spiritual Leaders. It's published by Brodmann and Holman, academic. And in this work, you've unpacked really the way that Augustine provides, you know, some more intimate and personal spiritual leadership to those who are in his care. So we're going to eventually get to there, but really I'd like to kind of start a little bit earlier in the conversation and just ask you, well, what was the picture of mentoring that Augustine had in mind in his era?
Yeah, that's a good question. In a lot of ways, I think he was groundbreaking. But if we look at Augustine personally, his personal background, he was always in the company of friends. And so I don't think we can think about Augustine and mentoring and discipleship without the strong sense of friendship. To the point that the Roman philosopher Cicero had written a book on friendship. And Augustine, the big word in Latin is amicitia, like where we get amicable from. And Augustine kind of redefined friendship toward spiritual friendship, toward Christian friendship. Classically, in the Roman African world, friendship, you were friends with somebody that you connected with from the same social class, the same circles. But Augustine said that friendship, you're friends with another brother or sister in Christ because Christ is in both of you. So I would say friendship is the first thing. The second thing is that we have to remember Augustine was a monk. He lived in a monastery. In a communal monastery with other brothers. And so they prayed together, they read scripture together, they ate together, and of course they ministered together. And as you have already started to say, he did live it during a turbulent time. And so I would probably say Augustine's notion of mentoring comes from friendship in a monastic life.
What's coming to mind, and it's a quote I've used in a number of classes because it stands out so much to me, especially when I'm reflecting on leadership. And relationships is such a ubiquitous and undeniable category when we're talking about leadership in the 21st century, especially in the West with our shrinking power differentials, is he has this discussion about stealing pears. And he says that he says he never would have stolen them without the friends that he's with, and he calls it a friendship friendship so unfriendly, right? It's this kind of, it's not simply neutral relationships or neutral kinds of friendships. It's one that is misleading him in his life and turns him in a way that he considers just has such heaviness to him, right? It's that he would steal things simply for the vice of it all, not because he needed it or enjoyed it or anything, just
because it was forbidden.
To have this kind of power of remaking the law, so to speak, right? To demand it. How do you think that experience in Augustine's life played into his reflection on mentoring? That if mentoring is about friendship and the crossing of different social boundaries in Christ that happened in Christ, how did that experience influence the way that he was mentoring his friends?
Sure. Well, you're right. You make a very good point that he was influenced for evil, for sin, in his teenage years. And then, of course, once he was drawn to Christ, once he was converted to Christ, he didn't stop being friendly. That didn't stop being part of his personality. And so even, you know, if you read about his conversion, you mentioned his book Confessions in book 8 or chapter 8 of Confessions. It's the story of his conversion. Well, he's not alone in that. One of his best friends is right nearby. And then after he leaves and is getting ready to prepare for baptism, he goes on a retreat with several friends. And so we really don't really ever see Augustine in any biographical way alone in his life. And that would include his mom. That would include a lot of people don't know Augustine was a father at the age of 19. And so he began to, he was a kind of a single parent, if you will. And so even his son became a dialogue partner in the journey of faith.
Hmm. Let me just try and bring it into today as much as we can. What connections do you see this emphasis on friendship in mentoring having? What connections do you see it having for pastors today and spiritual leaders today? How can they apply this concept of mentoring and friendship?
Yeah, I think two ways. One is he called his friend Alypius. He said he is a friend from my heart, and kind of like what we would say a bosom buddy, a soulmate. He was known. He knew his friends, and they really knew him. And that includes confessing the darkness and the yuck that's in our lives. And I think many pastors today that are no longer in the ministry or have experienced moral failure or other disappointments and crash and burns along the way, I think we see in Augustine someone who knew others and people that really genuinely knew him. And therefore there was support there. That's the first way I see actually friendship applying. The second thing that I think is for me, the value, I worked for about 4 or 5 years researching this book. And to me, the takeaway was that we never see Augustine stop growing and learning. And so I enjoyed reading through all of Augustine's letters. And I argue that he mentored through letter, but in many of the letters that he wrote, he was also asking questions of others and growing. And so he had never gotten to a point where he graduated from being a disciple. So to me, I think if I could give a second tagline to this book, it would be a mentor is always a disciple. And that involves others. And again, I would say while I was writing this book and even reflecting on my own life and church ministry and pastors that I've known, especially that haven't remained in ministry, is because they were isolated and they didn't have to be. That's a lie from the evil one that you are so proud to think that you can't confess your sins to someone else and be open about your life. Or not just get to the point of where you need to confess sin, but to see some of the warning signs along the way. So he walked with others in his journey of faith and ministry, and I we can't get enough of that.
One of my favorite Augustine quotes comes from one of his sermons. I believe it's a Christmas sermon, and he says, For you, I am bishop. With mm-hmm. you, I am Christian.
Yep.
Right? This concept of, yeah, there's leadership that he's doing, and obviously a towering intellect and mm-hmm. potent writer, and he's aware of the influence that he's having, and that's part of why he's writing so prolifically. Mm-hmm. And what he needs to have is he's leading and trying to shepherd, you know, the so many across the Roman world. But he always has this keen sense of being Christian with brothers and sisters sure. in the faith. Absolutely. And so there's a sense of duty, but also the sense of camaraderie, which really starts to put together the humility that mm-hmm. one would need, but also the desire to continue to learn and place oneself under the ability to learn from other people.
Sure. And I think I would add to that, we've been talking about pastors relating to other pastors and being open and being transparent, but we see Augustine doing that with the lay people in the congregation too. And his confessions that he wrote, one of my favorite lines from there is he says, I don't just confess what I was, you know, stealing pears and all of this, but I confess what I am now. And so his readers, which would have included other church leaders, but also lay people, he talked about confessing. He struggled with overeating. He struggled with wanting the praise of men. He struggled with lustful thoughts. So we can all relate to that. And the fourth one is that at night he was working on geometric equations in his head, and he struggled with shutting his mind down. Now, I don't really struggle with that personally. But I think the point that we see that makes the confessions a radical piece is that here he is, the bishop of a church, the leading bishop in North Africa. And he's not just saying, this is what I was before Christ or earlier on. This is what I'm struggling with now. And so there's a high degree of transparency. And in my journey as a Christian, when a Christian leader is open about their sin, about their struggles, it doesn't make people want to knock them off their pedestal. It actually breeds, you know, more openness from others. So it's not, you know, you're my pastor and you should have it all together. It's an encouragement for other people to be open about their lives.
Let me connect this up with another issue that just is part of the context where we're all doing ministry, especially in light of COVID-19, and that's technology. All right. Mm-hmm. So I just come off a Zoom call with about 10 students and a couple of friends that accepted an invitation to join our brainstorming discussion about how are they using technology in liminal mm-hmm. spaces. So to bring mm-hmm. people into the church or to facilitate community among their church congregation where they otherwise wouldn't have it because they're not able to gather in person, or the challenge of gathering in person is just so extreme right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, how does this relate to where we are in a technological age? And how I would maybe connect it is part of what you've just talked about is the example that Augustine has to be open and transparent and authentic, right? And to share not only what he was like, but also what he is like. And how technology gives us a chance to, present cleaned up versions of ourselves.
Sure.
And sometimes, sure. sometimes, you know, if I think about my Facebook feed and I've got mm-hmm. friends on there and like, oh man, I appreciate the being authentic or to toss that out, but I'm not sure I would have said that, or that maybe you would want to know a little bit more carefully who all is reading that kind of disclosure that you're offering. And so for me, I'm trying to think about, there's tremendous tools to be authentic and vulnerable with lots of people, which seems to water down what authenticity is about. At the same time, there's tools to clean ourselves up. And so it's just, right, there's this tension between how do I share authentically? Is it proper to trust myself so vulnerably to people? So I'd just like to toss it to you. How do you see these reflections on Augustine and mentoring and friendship, authenticity, applying in a technological age?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I'll give you what I think right now. I mean, I think overall, on one hand, on social media in particular, so Facebook and Instagram and things, we can curate a narrative of our lives that's just not really real. And I have teenage kids, and we have these conversations a good bit about what is really real in terms of life. And what we often come back to, we have a rule that when we're riding in the car together, if I have come to pick you up from play practice or soccer practice, and we've got to drive home for 20 minutes, you can put the phone away. And so I usually say, you know, human here, you know, and so I think that on one side, there's the danger. And we talk about this a lot of just a curated narrative that's not really real life. You know, on the other hand, though, to go on your Facebook wall and just spew something that's, I don't know if the comments or the likes or whatever emojis are there are going to care for your soul if you share something. And so, I'm actually, though I use social media, and I think there's an appropriate place there to be real. There are definitely limits. On the other hand, you know, we're on a Zoom call right now where I see you face to face. And there are a number of students that I have that are distant students or either they're on quarantine, and we can pray together over this medium. We can be real. And so it is more one-on-one, and I know, many churches are doing small groups over Zoom. So, I mean, I think that can be really used there, a good medium. I will just say one final thing that we're somebodies in bodies. And for us to do this for 6, 7, 8 hours a day, God didn't make us for that. Mm. And so I think that even just that we are better off physically, mentally, emotionally, if we could have this conversation, hopefully face to face. This is our extended Lent, if you will. And now we're into Advent of waiting and praying for a healthier world, to be in. And so, I think the medium, you know, the medium can be the message. So just some thoughts there. You know, I will say a little different from social media or Zoom or what, I used to live in North Africa, and even back then, I would have friends that would just text just to say, hi, thinking about you, and or prayed for you. And I have friends now, and I think that even just someone else knowing that you are alive and they've prayed for you, and even if you don't have a conversation, I think that's a good redeeming use of technology.
Well, I just, jotting notes down as I reflect and try to keep my mind engaged in our conversation, the thought comes to mind, text my buddy. So I write down, right, text Steve. So mm-hmm. that comes out even in this conversation of who am I entrusting myself to? Who am I being worthy of being entrusted to, right? Who am I being trustworthy on behalf of so that I can hear their story? And technology really is a fantastic tool, mm-hmm. even when we're being aware of the ways that it's forming us. And of course, mm-hmm. writing itself is a technology, right? It hasn't always been around. It was invented. Its use was refined. Augustine's probably using different people to record his own thoughts as he's
purely dictation. Yeah.
You know, I was wondering if some of his, the amanuensis that he's using, if they are tidying up some of his thoughts as they go along to make them a little bit crisper, clearer, right? You know, if there's an editing process, certainly there's a relational process. There'd be a measure of conversation at some point that's happening along the way. But, you know, I don't know. I wonder if that's part of the process that's happening.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, a lot of Augustine's works that have come now into English, a work like On the City of God, in the unabridged edition, there's a lot of repetition because those were given orally. They were written down, and it's almost like collating and transcribing a sermon series you preach over 6 months or a year, where you go back and you recap things, or you forgot you told the story, or you made this point. And so we abridge things, you know, in the modern day, but when we read the unabridged, there is a lot of overlap. But yeah, that's a good point. That would probably make some type of upper level graduate study of those who staffed Augustine and you know, his speech writers, if you will, and transcript things right. So I don't know.
Well, thinking about even previous episode I had was interviewing our seminary president, Colleen Durr, and she was talking about communication. It's part of what her doctoral research was in, and just reminding stuff we already know, but how important to consider the audience when we're writing. And as I bring it back to social media and technology, I'm thinking about, okay, there's an audience there that should keep that I'm accountable to what I publish, right? And putting stuff on my Facebook feed is a measure of, is a kind of publishing. So I need to be accountable to the audience. And it's so diverse, right? It's incredibly diverse from cousins who are family members who I know are never going to forget a single word I say. And if I make a grammatical error, they're going to screenshot it and send it to me, right? To people that are students that maybe I met in literally just added them 10 minutes ago, right? There's a huge range of people in it. And with that in mind, I'm thinking about sometimes we think that authenticity requires this like excited utterance, like it's the thought that comes into mind that I have to share right away, that's the authentic self. But I think we can also reflect on the authentic self is also the one I'm becoming in Christ. And so whenever I do allow the audience to keep me accountable to what it is I'm sharing and saying in really public venues like social media, Facebook, Instagram, whatever else. There's a way that I'm not just revealing my authentic self, but I'm also becoming the self that I want to become as I allow them to chasten or to form part of the communication that I'm trying to give. That's still authentic. I'm not trying to mislead anybody, but it might not be what I was going to write in the heat of the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Joining us today is Dr. Edward Smither. Dr. Smither is the author of Augustine as Mentor, A Model for Preparing Spiritual Leaders. It's published by Brodmann and Holman. Ed, I really enjoy the Confessions, right? I've enjoyed going through that. I'm trying to develop some material for leadership development for pastors to help encourage them to read the Confessions. And I see it as a kind of memoir. Augustine is exploring his own story to see how God was involved in hindsight as he's reflecting upon this. Love to hear your thoughts on what role you see memoir and that kind of reflection playing in the leader's life today.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you think about why Augustine wrote Confessions, it was the invitation of another bishop, Paulinus of Nola in Italy, who basically didn't know Augustine. And he said, would you write down a few words about your story? Tell us your spiritual story. And I know that today we would look at Augustine's work as a memoir, more autobiographical, but really it's composed as a long prayer. It's an epic prayer. And so he's talking to God. He's sending this work to Paulinus, but he's telling God, God, this is what you did, and so forth. I mean, if we, I think about there was an old Keith Green song from the 70s, Make My Life a Prayer to You. And I think that might have been one of Augustine's favorite songs if he had lived in the 1970s. But the other thing I think that's powerful about it is I often, when I have students read Confessions, I have them read book 8 or chapter 8, and that's his conversion experience. But even before that, there are four testimonies in book 8. There's the testimony of St. Antony of Egypt, who was a monk. There was the testimony of the philosopher Marius Victorinus, who came to faith. And then there's the testimony of two Roman officials who came to faith. And so what we have is, if you think about it in terms of layers, Augustine is telling his story to Paulinus and anyone else who's reading. But inside Augustine's story are two friends of his, Simplicianus and Ponticianus, telling Augustine the story of these four men who'd come to faith. So we see stories within a story, and all of it is different people who have embraced Christ. We have Roman officials who are career-minded. We have Antony, who left to be a monk. We have a philosopher in Marius. And Augustine could identify with each one of those. And I really think this is brilliant because not only, I think when we're involved in evangelism, sharing our story is an important thing. No one can, people can disagree with what you think or what you argue, but no one really says, no, that didn't happen to you. I'm invalidating your experience. We have that opportunity to share our story. But having read Augustine through the years, I often feel free to tell other people's testimonies. Did you hear what happened to this person? Who, especially if it's somebody I think that someone I'm sharing Christ with can identify with. And so I think that's a very helpful thing today to, because we're growing up, I was trained to share my personal testimony. But then when I went to live in Africa, I realized that the I is not a big thing. I'm part of a community. And so in a sense, we get to tell the stories of God's people. And I think it's a really cool thing and a really powerful thing for us.
Well, I think that is such an insight that why it's so important to hear the stories of other brothers and sisters in the faith, why it's so important not just to hear them, but to delve into them a little bit and to appropriately, right, look into the corners and help them shine the light into the corners to see, well, what was God doing? And in part, that's not only are we helping them to develop their story, but we're also accumulating really the corporate story that God is telling through individual lives, but that then can be shared, right? I love that what you said, you know, did you hear about what God is doing in so-and-so's life? And just for me, a measure of vulnerability is like, man, it's so tempting to stay focused on the self, right? Well, God, what are you doing for me, right? What are you doing in my life? And you know, sometimes my life is marked by the grace of God, but in unremarkable ways. And he's doing something remarkable in somebody else's life. And so pay attention. And, you know, of course, there's all kinds of levels of finitude and jealousy even that, sure, that might show why I don't pay attention to other people's stories. But what a gift it is, and to allow God both to exhort, encourage us as we hear these stories, and then to resources to share these stories with other people as God brings into contact with us and in our spheres of influence people who need to hear about the good news.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
Final question, sure. Ed. This is a turbulent time, right? It is in the United States, it's been election season. I come from the Ottawa Valley in Canada, and they're in the midst of a minority government and the different actions and politics that go with that. We've got people listening in who are in different continents, South America, Africa. We've got people listening in. And really, it's interesting that it's a turbulent time for the world, right? The world is just marked with the turbulence of not only political division, but financial instability, COVID-19, what's going on. At the same time, Augustine lived in a tumultuous time too. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear from you. What do you think we can learn from Augustine as we lead and mentor others? From Augustine in a tumultuous time to us in a tumultuous time, what are some of the parallels, some of the takeaways we can make from his leadership and mentoring?
Yeah, well, two things. One is perspective. Yesterday in church, our minister said that don't make what God has given to be a comma, a full stop period, that suffering is never the last thing, and so that's what the City of God was about. It was an early philosophy of history. What does it mean to be a pilgrim in the earthly city when you're a citizen of heaven? And how do we sojourn as pilgrims in this city? And so where we will have hardship, in Augustine, there were, Rome fell while he was the Bishop of Hippo, refugees poured into his city. There was religious tension. There was violence, and the other thing I think is what he would say to pastors, because I was thinking about this when he asked the question. There was a pastor that wrote him a letter and said, the Visigoths, the Vandals are coming into our city. Is it okay if I take off and hide? And he said, no. He said, because if you, the shepherd of God's people, leave, who's going to lead the Lord's Supper? Who's going to preach the gospel? Who's going to comfort? Who's going to offer absolution? If you, the minister, flee, then who will shepherd God's flock? And so I think for him, the priority of pastoral ministry must go on for God's shepherds, even during difficult times. Now, that doesn't mean that the pastors don't go through hard times or can't. I heard a sermon from a friend yesterday talking about having the Advent blues and just the difficulties, which I think I appreciate his transparency. But we don't want to quit. We want to stay faithful to our calling, true to our calling. And I think that's what he teaches us, because it's in a little while, Christ will come in glory and we will sit eternally at the Lord's table. This is a little while. So not just till we get a vaccine, but I mean, our whole lives are going to be suffering on one level or another, but it's a little while.
So two things to take away. One is perspective, right? It's a little while. Two is the priority of the pastoral leadership role. And those are questions that are in the heat of the moment, right? As you know, there's different studies that are being released from people or organizations and companies that are producing vaccines and how those are going to roll out, what effect they're going to have, how effective they're going to be, right? Different questions. And yet, like you say, perspective, there still will be, it's not the only issue, even if it's the one that's really in the forefront of our mind, in the forefront of so many people's minds, there are other issues that are springing to the immediate fronts of people's minds in our church. So for me, my wife is 39 weeks plus 2 days pregnant. And so it's hard for me to get that out of my mind, right? Like COVID is somewhere in there. New baby is somewhere in there. Ongoing responsibility is somewhere in there. And really part of the pastoral ministry is to be alongside and with people to help them sort out, right? It's hard for us to sort out, well, what do I give my attention to now? And then now and next week, right? And pastors have such a tough job, but so important to help people sort out those priorities. And of course, that's such an important theme in Augustine's work is rightly ordering our loves so that our lives are well ordered. And your second word, your first word of perspective, I thought was so helpful, right? Is how do we keep in mind kind of where we are display our primary allegiances whenever there's all kinds of things that call for our attention at different points in the world. Dr. Smither, Ed, thanks so much for taking this time to reflect on Augustine with us. I lied before when I said final question. Here's the final question. Let's say we've got somebody listening in today and they say, you know what, I tried to read City of God back whenever I was doing my MDiv, and you know, maybe somebody gave them an unabridged version. They say, I got lost. Or maybe they say, I tried to read Augustine's Confessions and just didn't get too far into it. If they were going to start somewhere and they really want to read a primary source, maybe, you know, you're familiar with his letters, you're familiar with his works. Mm-hmm. What's one, maybe a sermon, what's one thing you would say, hey, look this up, start here with one of these primary writings of Augustine. Where would you suggest that they start?
I mean, I do think I would encourage Confessions, and I would start with maybe Book 8 of Confessions, which is, you know, 6 or 7 pages long, and then maybe go back and read the very beginning. There's that real money line, Lord, our hearts are restless until we find our rest in You. That's how Confessions begins, and so maybe that. I think his short work, The Enchiridion, on faith, hope, and love, about the virtues of faith, hope, and love. That's a short work that was designed as a catechism, and so for discipleship. So I think that would be those would be good. The nice thing is that a publisher called New City Press has now finished all of the works of Augustine. It's like 44 volumes, and then they have some shorter kind of essential volumes, and so in very readable English. So you're not, sometimes what you find online is pretty old and it's hard to get through, but I would start with those things.
maybe as a way to pull things together, maybe a pastor or spiritual leader could grab a friend or two or three, and mm-hmm. they all commit to reading the Enchiridion together,
yes.
and learn to share their own story, right? And hear other mm-hmm. people's stories. That's a way to tie together some primary readings, some relationships, and some ways of hearing what God is about for purposes of evangelism. So thanks for sparking that little project. Maybe I'll make that as a project for extra points as we near the end of the semester and a student or two is looking for a bonus assignment or two.
Oh, imagine that.
how gracious of me then to dole that out as a professor. Oh boy. Well, Ed, thank you so much for joining us today on the Wesley Seminary podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time to do that for us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Joining us today has been Dr. Ed Smither. Dr. Smither is the author of Augustine as Mentor, a Model for Preparing Spiritual Leaders, published by Brodmann and Holman. Thank you, Dr. Smither. Thank you, Cam, for your production work. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, giving me a great opportunity to talk to interesting people and about interesting things like St. Augustine and like with people like Dr. Smither. So thank you so much, everybody, for making this possible. Trust you all to have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.